I've lived in New Jersey my entire life, and I've been involved in lots of arts. Acting, writing, I even married a musician. But a lot of people don't think New Jersey is known for arts and culture. Well, they're wrong. And my goal is to introduce everyone to the most talented people I know. They're singers, they're writers, they're musicians, they're actors, they're chefs, they're martial artists, they're everything you can imagine, and they're going to be on my show. Every one of them. Well, maybe not every one of them, but a lot of them. So they're in New Jersey, and maybe they're not so famous, but maybe they should be. I'm Lucille Lasapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey. What if I told you that my guest today was in one of the top pop acts from the late 60s, early 70s? You remember the Mamas and the Papas, right? Well, no, it's not Mama Cass, because she's been dead for many years. But today I am talking to her replacement, Deb Lyons. Deb Lyons is not only a professional singer of pop, jazz, Broadway, and rock, but she's also an actor and a vocal coach. We're going to be talking about, of course, the Mamas and Papas, but also how her whistling skills came in really handy one night and may have secured her that gig. How different is life on the road for her than for her husband, professional horn player, Steve Jankowski? Well, we talk about that too. We also do a duet together, and she gives me a couple of pointers on how to improve your singing. Maybe she should have given to me before we sang.
Hello, Deb.
Hello, Lucille.
It's really nice to finally meet you.
Absolutely.
So, Deb, you're not only a singer, but you're also an actor?
I am also an actor. You know, I use my skills in many ways.
How did I not know this? And how did I not know that you were the new and improved Mama Cass for 5 years?
That was a wonderful opportunity that just sort of came my way by accident.
Tell me about that experience of working with that group.
You know, it's funny, you know, when you grow up and you hear these songs when you're a child, like California Dreamin' or Monday Monday, to get that chance to work with those artists as an adult is kind of a dream come true. The gig itself came to me just through friends hearing about an audition. It was great. We got to tour the world, did concerts, tons of festivals, and Vegas.
What was the most interesting experience you had when you were working with that group?
I don't know. I want to say playing Mile High Stadium in Colorado, in Denver. And we were on the bill with the Beach Boys and America. Mm. We did that 2 summers in a row. We also did it with the Temptations and Mary Wilson of the Supremes.
Yeah.
And Chuck Berry. So, you know, all those icons, you're like, oh my God, we're all hanging backstage. Yeah. Hello.
Were they what you expected them to be, or were you like, how disappointing? I mean, just personally speaking with them.
Well, the Beach Boys were very isolated. We were not really, you know, they were sort of, they had they had a lot of security around them. The guys from America were really super friendly and nice and were taking pictures of all the bands. And Chuck Berry, it's so funny because he's getting ready to walk on stage. And I said, Chuck, like he didn't know who I was. He didn't watch our act.
Yeah.
I said, could I get a picture? And he was like, well, yes. and what's funny is that really, you know, the crowd is waiting. I shouldn't have even asked for the picture, but he was like, yeah, let the people wait, take a picture. just seeing how people like that work in a situation that's so, you know, I would say it's high pressure, but for somebody like Chuck Berry.
Sure, it probably isn't. It's interesting because I think kind of the best and the worst come out in people when they get famous. The worst is like they feel like they can get away with anything. And the best is like they're just still the nice people that they always were.
Yeah, I think everybody's a human being. We all have to do laundry or whatever and clean our house. So I think as long as you treat people, just like you would your neighbor. I mean, and then on the other hand, you know, you have people that you just feel like you don't, they have a moat around them. So you just don't really, you go like, I'm not passing the moat.
Yeah.
You know? Like I had worked with Mary Wilson for about 6 weeks straight in Atlanta years ago. We were doing a show together. But I always felt like, even though I'd ask her 5,000 questions about Motown and the Supremes, she was clearly was sort of like, not aloof, but it was like she wasn't going to get palsy-wowsy with anyone.
Yeah.
She was really, she kind of sort of kept a professional distance, which I respect. So totally.
Yeah. So I always think of you as a singer, but looking at your bio, you've got some incredible acting credentials. Lady Montague, Romeo's family matriarch.
Right.
Velma, the television station owner in Hairspray.
Right.
And even June Carter in Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
So what's your first love, singing or acting?
Well, singing is what I have devoted so much of my career and time. I'm really interested in singing, and I just actually finished this intensive conference. It was all just singing teachers talking about singing for 10 days straight, 24 hours a day, and I loved it. Yeah. Just because it's a mysterious instrument, the voice.
Mm-hmm.
How does it work? We can't really see it, you know? It's used to express a million different emotions. Well, right after I got out of high school, I got this job at a place where all the waitresses had to do a can-can dance on the bar. The place looked like a giant old-timey saloon.
Yeah.
It was very much like New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone dressed like it was 1918 or something. The band would enter through, there was a giant fire pole from the ceiling, and they would slide down the pole and do their show. But one night, I got off of work going to the dressing room, and I was singing really loud. Because I thought I was alone. And so I was just walking down the hall, just going, a good man is hard to find, or whatever. And the band leader happened to be up there on a break, and he said, oh, you know, you sound really good. Why don't you sit in with the band? And, you know, I'll call you down once in a while, and you'll sing. And I went, well, okay. And that's sort of how I started singing.
And your singing doesn't seem to fall into a single genre. You've also done a lot of studio work, right?
Yeah.
And you've been a voiceover artist. What haven't you done?
You know what? I've never really done TV. I never auditioned. Maybe two. It was funny. I was telling someone, I had two auditions for Law and Order, and they were both for people who were getting ready to be killed.
So what kind of singing do you enjoy the most?
I love jazz. I think when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a big band singer. Mm-hmm. I love high rock and roll. You know, I love singing Led Zeppelin or Rolling Stones. You know, I love singing like old James Taylor folky stuff.
Yeah.
It's sort of an eclectic taste.
So both you and your husband, Steve Jankowski, are professional musicians. You both do a lot of traveling. Do you think that this has helped or hurt your marriage?
Well, you know, it's funny because when we got married, Steve's aunt said to me, oh, you'll stay married forever because you're both always on the road. Because it's always like that renewed thing, like, we're home.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we have unconventional schedules. We don't have that kind of order. We're very used to our lives being up and down as far as who's around. It's one of the reasons we can't get a dog.
Yeah, and I always say that one of the reasons my marriage with Gary has been so good is because there are times he's not here. You know, and it's not that I don't want to be with him, but like, I know I have the house to myself, and I know he's going to be gone for 3 or 4 or 5 hours.
Sure,
and,
sure.
You know, it's the same thing with him. I go and I do acting or whatever else, and he knows he's got the house to himself.
Yes, exactly. The same with us. I think we both appreciate having space. And it was so interesting, you know, during the pandemic, everybody together all of the time. So that was the first time for us. But I think as artists, too, you sort of need to have some space to consider, to be creative, to have ideas, to nurture that part of yourself. You know, it's easy to get caught up in like, got to get the next gig, got to practice for this gig, and to lose the art part of it. But on that, there were days Steve was somewhere like, you know, off the coast of France, you know, in some fabulous festival, and I was mowing the lawn, and I was like, you know, the disparity here, this is not so good.
Yeah. What was your favorite band to work with?
Well, I mean, obviously, I have to say Mamas and Papas, because that was just a kind of...
A whole different level.
Yeah. It's a captive audience. People are coming because they want to hear those hits.
Right.
It's not like people don't know what to expect.
Yeah. It's the difference between being a singer and a comedian.
Yeah.
If you're a comedian, people know what to expect, but they don't want to hear the same thing.
Right.
I already heard that bit. Give me something new.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before, I've been an actor. I've also done a lot of murder mystery dinners, which are a lot of fun.
Really?
Yeah. You really learn a lot about improv. Yeah, but I really feel inadequate next to you. When I read your resume, it's like, I'm embarrassed to talk to her. But my question, based on my own experience, is about forgetting your lines. It hasn't often happened to me, but I always try to have a backup plan. How do you deal with it?
Well, I did a review, and there was, luckily, the musical director was on stage with us, with his book of music. And I went out on stage, and I just went up, and I thought, what is the first line? And I But luckily, because the pianist, he's sitting right there with the music, I just went over to him and I just put my hand on his shoulders like, this is part of the show, where I just lean over the pianist and look at the words. And it was this, it was like a Frank Sinatra review called My Way. So I could justify my actions, but I was like looking at the words and going, okay. And I have had that happen at an audition. The song I had chosen to sing was, you give your hand to me, and then you say hello. Luckily, the pianist, I had brought in my own accompanist for the audition because it was important for me. And so he plays the intro, and I just looked at him and I went, what's the first line? And he told me, and so then I sang it. The director just went like, clapped his hands. Oh. And I didn't know if it was like a, oh my God, I love it, or, oh, that was terrible that you got the first line. So anyway, when I got through the song, I turned around just as I was getting ready to walk out the door, and I said, why did you clap when I sang? And he said, because I love that song. So you have to just make it up. If you think about like a song like Elton John, hey kids, shake it loose together, the spotlight's hitting. Nobody really knew what those words were.
Yeah.
It sounds like, hey, give, bang, do ba da. So I've actually resorted to just saying like, ba do da do do da, you know, just making up sounds. When I first joined the Mamas and the Papas, there were three Papas because there was Denny Doherty, mm-hmm. John Phillips, and Scott McKenzie. Now, Scott McKenzie had gone to high school with John Phillips. They were best friends. Mm-hmm. And John wrote San Francisco for Scott McKenzie. And whenever one of them was ill, Scott would sub for whichever Papa. This one night in Vegas, I'd only been in the band for like 6 weeks or something, I'm doing Dream a Little Dream of Me, and at the end there's a whistling part, and right. Denny would always do the whistling. And so this was the first night that Denny didn't show up. Like, I just looked at the other Papas like, is somebody gonna whistle?
And they're like,
and they didn't do anything. So I just started whistling, and I could do it pretty good. And so afterwards the other guys in the band were like, oh, you totally have the gig now, you whistled.
So Gary's brother he's suffering from Parkinson's, and he's found that having his brother Jeff play the guitar has kind of helped his cognitive abilities. So what's your belief on the healing qualities of music?
Well, it's interesting. My dad had dementia in the last years of his life. I thought what was marvelous is that he didn't really know where he was. He thought he was at his old high school, and he didn't really know my name. He thought he was seeing people who had long since passed. Mm-hmm. And I would just say like, hey, Dad, how about singing that song, All the Girls I Loved Before? Say, the last 6 months, he couldn't necessarily remember the words, but he could remember the melody. And I thought, what part of the brain is activated? And you could see it totally lifted him up. I can't imagine a life or a world without music. I think it's absolutely healing. I was just working with this teacher this summer, and she was talking about the rhythm of the earth, if you think about the rhythm of the wind, the rhythm of the waves, just the rhythm of one's walking or running, and how much it's organically in us.
Yeah.
So that then to bring that into a way to express yourself musically, it's inspiring, gets people dancing. So I think it's a great tool.
Now, I don't know if you know the name Judith Durham. She was the lead singer in The Seekers. They did Georgie Girl.
Oh, that's so funny you say that, because I sing that song all the time.
Well, she just died. They had several top 10 hits, but then she ended up dropping out of The Searchers because of her weight. She was so self-conscious. She said they were all these gorgeous boys. She was gaining weight, so she dropped out, which is so incredibly sad. Nowadays, we don't really seem to face that issue. Look at singers like Lizzo. So that's kind of broken the mold. But how much of a problem is it still, weight and appearance, for female musicians?
I think, in spite of what people say, the reality is it's called show business. It's what is showing. I think it depends on the genre you're working in.
Isn't there a double standard, though? I mean, look at like people like Meatloaf.
Sure.
You never hear people saying, oh, he's too fat to be a singer. Or too ugly to be a... I mean, Mick Jagger's a pretty ugly guy.
don't pick on Mick.
But, yeah. But you don't hear people saying, oh, he's too ugly to be a singer.
So how does it translate to women? I think that it has to do with a person's confidence. So if, you know, if you look at Mama Cass, she didn't care.
Right.
She was like, this is me, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And she was tremendously popular among all her friends and was responsible, I believe, for bringing together Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It has to do, I think, with the individual's attitude. And that if you just say, like, this is me, this is who I am. I mean, even someone like, let's say, Kelly Clarkson has gotten larger. But
they gave her a hard time about it. And she kind of pushed back and said, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as she should. There sure is a lot of judging that going on around these days.
And you think about Karen Carpenter, and that's like an incredibly sad story, that she went in the opposite direction, anorexic. She withered away to nothing.
And that's tragic. It's tragic. I think it's worse for people who are in movies than it is for necessarily in music.
You know? Well, that's why it's always interesting to me to watch Australian or British television.
Yeah, people look real.
Yes. Gary and I always say, oh, I love British television because they look like real people. Their teeth might be crooked. They might have a big nose. You know, you watch American television and everybody is incredibly beautiful.
No one cares that Clint Eastwood is
old and craggy.
Well, that he was, you know. Well, I just read something recently that when Meryl Streep and Clint Eastwood did the movie Bridges of Madison County, that there was some question of whether Meryl should be cast because of her age. But there was no question. And that she said this, like no one was questioning Clint's age. But they were questioning her.
Are you doing anything musically right now?
So I'm still freelancing as a singer. And so my teaching really blew up during COVID, where suddenly everyone was like, yeah, I can just study virtually. I have more singing students than I ever had.
What's the biggest challenge you face with those singing students?
Getting them to practice. You know, everybody feels like, you know, if somebody picks up a violin and they try to play it, they know they don't know how to play it. Right? But everybody opens their mouth.
I have a violin that I...
Oh, okay, see?
I was trying to teach myself. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Do you really?
Yeah.
But, you know, with a voice, people will open up their mouth. They can make a sound. Can they get better if they practice? Absolutely. You know, it's like being an athlete, I have always said. But you have to work at it. You have to spend, like, at least 22 minutes, they've discovered. 22 minutes a day. That if you can just spend that time, that you will show definite benefits in your growth as a singer. One of the things that they've discovered is that, well, as far as learning singing, that if you are looking at your teacher while you're trying to practice everything, your brain is now engaged in what is she, you know, what is my teacher saying? Instead of just looking out and listening and trying to sense, like, what am I doing as a singer? You know, where am I feeling this? What's my jaw doing? And listening to yourself and just put the focus somewhere else.
Yeah. What's the most important thing somebody can do to improve their singing?
Just a really simple little tip.
I'm getting some free...
Simple little tip.
Free lesson here.
Go through the song and figure out where you're going to breathe. I know that sounds really simple. That's where people get tripped up. They're like, oh my God. You know, they don't even think about it. Open your mouth. Well, a lot of times when people are going to higher notes, where that's the more of the challenge, they will tighten up, they grip, they constrict, instead of just like release the sound and just let it go. Then part of what I've been working on more and more with my students is let's determine how much effort are you putting into this, 1 to 10. And then if they say, well, it's 8, well, let's just try it again and give me a 4. And then they find they actually, by using less effort, they get a better result.
Yeah, and that's what some other singers have said to me also. It's like,
really?
It's like more like you're talking. Try to sing the way you talk.
Exactly. Yeah. Just, speak on the pitch.
Now, I always ask singers that I interview to do a little duet with me. Because I love to sing, but I'm not very good.
Okay.
So I'm kind of afraid to sing with you.
Don't be.
How about, well, I mean, I love Funny Girl, but I don't think I can do a... I got 36 expressions.
Yeah. Sweetest pie and toughest leather.
And that's 30? 6 expressions more than all them Barrymores put together. Instead of just kicking me, why don't you give me a lift? Well, it must be a plot.
Oh, there, you got him so memorized. Oh, my God.
I'm scared that I got such a gift.
Such a gift.
Well, I'm miffed, cause I'm
the greatest star.
I am by far. But no one knows it. Hey, you're gonna hear a voice, a silver flute. Whoop. You'll hear each tune.
Oh, I know I'm going to be delicious.
When I expose it, I'm a natural Camille. As Camille, I just feel. I have so much to offer.
Oh, I know I'm going to be divine because
I'm a natural cougher.
Oh, my God.
See, now it made me sound better because you didn't know it.
Well, it's funny because I was just thinking, I got to go see that show.
This is my last question. And again, thank you so much for coming. This was great.
Sure. It's been fun.
So you said before that being a singer is like being an athlete.
Yeah.
So what particular kind of athlete do you think you are most like?
Oh.
A marathon runner? A baseball player? Maybe a boxer? You tell me and then tell me why.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, it's funny that you say marathon runner. I don't know anything about running a marathon, but trying to just maintaining a career throughout my adulthood, it is a marathon because it's not that you just get hired on day one and then you're working for 25 years. Mm. It's always every project has a very finite end, whether it's 1 year, you know, if you're lucky, or whether it's a gig that's ending in 4 hours. There's massive amount of homework and prep, and there's always a level of maintenance. So as an athlete, yes, you always have to maintain the instrument, maintain the vessel that the instrument is in, which is my body. And then as you get older, if you look at your skin and it gets wrinkled, yeah. Vocal cords are not immune to that. Everything's not as pliable, so you have to spend more time working on that. And there's no place where you say, well, I'm complete, I've perfected everything, and you know, the artwork is done. It's always evolving. Nature and gravity are always throwing stuff at you. I would say, yeah, it's more of a marathon runner because it's a long process. I love singing so much. I love music so much. There have been times, you know, in my career where I had some vocal issues and I had to deal with stuff. And it's the most terrifying thing to say, I hope that I can sing after this. Mm. To live a life without having a voice would be no life at all for me. I cherish that I can do what I can do.
Well, thank you so much, Deb, for coming today.
Absolutely, Lucille. Lucille! Anyway, it was a pleasure.
Thank you.
I love the arts, and I love to talk, and that's why I'm talking to local artists. And if you like listening, then subscribe to my podcast. You can do it on this page, on iTunes, or anywhere you get podcasts. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey.